Welcome to Pep and Ched with Megan Nash, a co-production with the Creative City Center in Regina, Saskatchewan. Hello, I'm Megan, and this is the podcast where I call up friends and we talk about touring, we talk about music, we talk about songwriting. You know. And if you have been listening for a while, you also know that eating disorders and disordered eating comes up fairly often in these conversations, and today is no different. Actually, in fact, today we get really into it, so I just want to give a content warning off the top here. Disordered eating, eating disorders, and diet culture is discussed heavily in this episode. Today's guest is Sydney Wright. Sydney Wright, not only is she a songwriter and a musician, she is also a registered dietitian. So of course, I had to ask her to be on my podcast about snacks and music, right? So I'm just so excited. She's a lovely human, and she also explains how cats work to me. That's in the second half of the conversation. I don't know how to have a pet cat, okay? So yeah. Anyways, I gotta stop spoiling it. Let's just get to the conversation, okay? Today's guest is Sydney Wright. Sydney, I'm so excited that you're here to chat with me. I am so excited for numerous reasons. One, I feel like I rarely get the opportunity to speak with someone who I feel, not trying to put words in your mouth, but I feel like hates the diet industry as much as I do.
Oh yeah, you're not putting words in my mouth. Those words have been in my mouth for a long time.
Woo! Let's party! I'm just so excited. Some listeners may not know this, but usually when I'm speaking with guests about snacks, I do encourage, like, I have a little, you know, conversation before. Oh, now I'm talking about, you know, the behind the scenes stuff before we get recording, about how I don't believe in putting like good or bad value judgment on food, and that's been a part of my own journey. And so I usually speak to the guests before we get into that, and I was saying to Sydney before we started recording, I don't have to do that. I was telling you, I don't have to do that with you, and I love your Instagram, and I'm just so excited that you're here. Sorry, I should let you speak. How are you?
No, I'm good. I'm great. I feel like I'm the one who's starstruck here. I'm so excited to be here. I love doing interviews, and I love that this is going to combine like two of my worlds, which is like the food and the eating stuff and the music. I'm just so excited. So thank you for having me.
Well, true pleasure. I love your Instagram, Sid the Dietitian. I love your account. And I was excited when because I feel like I stumbled upon your account before I like really had put two and two together of like who you were, who you are. Yeah. And then I realized, oh my goodness, this person's Regina based. And I'm like, oh my goodness, this person's also a musician. And I'm like, oh my goodness, this person also like is good friends with my friends. And like, what? Yeah. So all very exciting for me. How long have you had your Instagram going? I love it. I love your account.
I started that account after I graduated. So I graduated in 2020 and I started the account like April, May of 2020. And yeah, it's just kind of like organically grown since then. It's not huge or anything. But I also haven't done much to really, you know, promote myself, I guess. So it's been a pretty like organic growth of that account, and it doesn't take up too much of my life to the point where it stresses me out. So I think I'm in a nice place with it right now where it fills up my cup rather than, you know, runs me dry. So yeah. I really love the account too. It's a really nice place to get some of those thoughts out where I can't really express them otherwise, in a place where they will be so like accepted or start great conversations.
Right. Yeah. Where did you study?
I studied at the U of S. I did my first 2 years here in Regina, and then I did 4 years in Saskatoon at the College of Pharmacy and Nutrition.
Whoa. So what is your degree then? What is it?
It's a bachelor's of science in nutrition. And so I'm a registered dietitian. Yeah.
Oh, that's so cool.
Thank you.
That is really cool. I actually wanted to be a dietitian for probably 1 year in high school.
Yeah.
But then I just didn't really, I don't really have much secondary education. I went to college for a little bit for music business.
Okay. Well, checks out.
Yeah, back in the day when we thought drop cards were really going to take off. Drop cards and USB keys. And there's gotta be like a handful of listeners that are nodding their heads right now being like, yeah, I remember that 2009 drop cards were going to save us. But no, that's really interesting. And like, do you mind speaking about like what inspired you to, cause that's like, I went to school for like 1 year. Like that's just like 1 year of commitment. Like you have a lot of education and that's like really cool. And that also must come from a place of passion.
Yeah. So super interesting. Actually, it's a very ironic story. So I started my university career in psychology. I had taken the AP psychology course in high school. I already had some of the credits. And I thought I wanted to be a psychologist. So I started in psychology and realized you had to pretty much get your master's to get a job in psychology. And I was like, I don't want to do 6 years of school to get a job. So I was like, what else can I do? And at the time, I actually had very disordered eating myself. I was very wrapped up in diet culture. I would even call it an undiagnosed eating disorder. And so I heard about the nutrition program and I saw it as an opportunity to learn how to be the healthiest person in the world. So that's actually, it came from a very disordered place, but that is how I applied for nutrition school. And then it's really ironic because I ended up doing 6 years of school to get a job anyway. but it's kind of come full circle because now I feel like my work that I do really combines psychology with nutrition, like the science of nutrition. So I did the right thing. It all worked out. But yeah, it's a really like ironic story.
Yeah, I did some quick math in my head there and I thought, wait a second. You did go to school for 6 years.
Yep.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Are you doing okay?
Yeah.
Now? You're doing well?
Yeah. Yeah, I am. Yeah. I've only been working for how long now? A year and a half, a year and a bit. I don't know. and I feel like my career has like just sort of gained so much momentum and I'm just kind of like along for the ride and I'm exactly like where I dreamed of being when I was in school. But I didn't think it would be like possible this soon after school. Like I have literally my two quote unquote dream jobs, if anyone actually dreams of labor, but I really love my work and I would say I am professionally in the exact place I could ever want to be or that I've ever wanted to be before. So I'm very, very lucky.
I'm a Scorpio sun and I just realized like the way that I phrased my last question and just like I'm just like, you know, we're like what, 7 minutes into this conversation and I just want to be like, are you okay? What I meant by that is you answered a big part of that, but I'm you mentioned that like your disordered eating started you on this path. Yeah. And you don't have to speak about this if you don't want to, like we can edit anything out as well too. But like, if you don't mind, this seems like a really personal question, but like, what's your relationship with food like now? And how did your education, like change that?
No, I actually love talking about this. And yeah, so, okay. So when I got into school, I still had all these really obviously disordered food beliefs and stuff. And it wasn't until I, like the first year about of the program is just all science classes, essentially. You really don't learn much of anything else. It's just like biochemistry, physiology, pathology, et cetera, et cetera. So in learning all that, suddenly food started to become a lot more morally neutral. Because I started learning, like, it's literally just chemicals and like, this is what it does in the body. And for me, learning about the science behind food was actually what started to pull me out of some of those, beliefs around like food being a moral thing, because I definitely had, I'm vegan currently still, but I was a militant vegan back then. And that morality piece was super, super entrenched in like the way I understood food and the way I chose to speak about food and like the food decisions I made for myself. So I think getting into school, learning about the science behind it, that was where it started to change for me. And then throughout the program, you start to learn a lot more about like social determinants of health and things that affect health that have nothing to do with nutrition. And it really just kind of shook me a little bit, like grabbed my shoulders and was like, you got it wrong. This is not a moral thing. And it's funny because with my eating disorder, I never was seeking treatment. Like I never was diagnosed. I never even really knew that I had as big of a problem as I did until I had sort of left it behind. And I think part of that was as I learned this stuff in school and I started to become more passionate about the non-diet approach, that sort of filled a spot for me of like, who am I? What do I stand for? And like, what is my identity? Because I think for a lot of people, eating disorders or like disordered eating or like food or wellness obsession, it has a lot to do with identity and, you know, like needing to receive your validation from somewhere and needing to feel like you have something that summarizes who you are as a person. And I think for me, it was just this slow, like swapping out of like, what do I actually value? What actually matters to me? And then I looked back and I was like, whoa, I had a serious problem and I don't anymore. So long story short, I would say my food relationship now is the best it's ever been, to the point where I can still look back at my struggles and use that to empathize with people that I work with now, but I'm so far away from it that, you know, it doesn't affect me in the way where I'm getting triggered by, you know, certain situations that come up or anything like that. It feels like it's definitely in my past.
Wow. Yeah. I appreciate you sharing that with me. And, yeah, it's interesting to hear you speak about that. I feel like, because with myself and my own journey, I never really seeked treatment. Like I was diagnosed when I was, I think it was 15, 16. So half my life ago. Mm-hmm. And then I found myself in the last few years being, and I do believe the right term, in some of the contexts, like some of the situations would be triggered by being around folks that were struggling, like that did mm-hmm. have eating disorders as well. And it so surprised me. It really surprised me. And because I thought it was so far in my past, because it's like, I'm 32 now. I was 15. I was 16 then, you know? Then these little waves would just come up. And I, at the start of 2020, I remember, and I spoke about this with a couple pals on the podcast before, like I got this huge urge to diet. Like right when the pandemic hit, I was like, I remember I had this thought and it was just like, it stopped me in my tracks because I hadn't had that thought in a while, was like, I should diet. And I'm like, maybe some listeners won't understand this and think like, how is that such like a stop you in your tracks kind of thought. But for me, I had to sit with that for days. Like, why did that hit me so hard? But I know that for me, it comes from a place of wanting control. Like, you know, we felt so out of control. Everything was getting canceled. And like, my career and my life are so closely, like there's not really a separate me from my music. I'm not saying that's good or bad. It's just the reality, you know. And I've drawn the comparison to like growing up on the farm. Like the farm was like your lifestyle, right? For me, music is still my lifestyle, and like so much a part of my identity too. Like I identify as a songwriter, and then all of a sudden it's like, no, you're not allowed to tour. You can't. And then like I was just like so depressed. And totally. Oh gosh, yeah, that thought just like stopped me in my tracks. And that's 15 years after I was originally diagnosed, and just like, like for me, I'm like, it's taken me a while to realize that like healing is not linear and I need to be like conscious of that. And I've said before, I can't remember where I first heard this quote, but like for me, like my eating disorder is like a pebble in the ocean of my being. It's like always kind of there, but it's like really, really, really small. And I have to just like, I can't ignore it or think it's gone because that's when it catches me off guard.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, and when, you know, when I use the word triggered, like I know it gets used out of context so much, but what I'm talking about is that like psychosomatic, like the physical system, you know, like the whole body reaction that you get when something comes up. And like you said, like for a lot of people with eating disorders, like it's always going to be part of your story. It's always there. It's, you know, you can continue writing and you can start writing about something else, but it's always going to be there. And just because it comes up for you again, like in 2020, when your environment has drastically changed, that doesn't mean you're not, you know, or that you, it doesn't mean you've regressed. That's not what it means at all. That just, to me, hearing that, I'm like, that makes perfect sense. And I think the only reason for me why that might not necessarily happen is because every single day, like my, this is my work, is like addressing these beliefs, you know, working through them with other people. So it never really gets pushed back or it's never out of mind. Right. Like it's always front of mind because I'm dealing with it constantly. So I think that's the difference. And it, yeah, like I said, it doesn't mean you've regressed. It's, that's so natural and it makes so much sense.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I appreciate hearing that. And, I was just thinking, I was like thinking while you were like talking about this, I'm like, wow, Sydney is not getting paid enough to be a guest on this podcast with me. You're like, giving honestly, me this, I didn't like, professional advice. And I'm like, oh, thank you.
I didn't even know I was getting paid. So I'm just stoked to be here.
Yay. Well, you know, huge shout out to the Creative City Center. It's through some funding that they've received, and it's a way to get artists some money right now during the pandemic. So I just like, it's so nice. I love the podcast. Honestly, has been such a blessing for me because not only is it a chance to like reach out to people and like to make new friends and also reconnect with old friends and to like, be able to, hey, do you want to do this thing? It pays. Like right now, it's like, that's such a nice thing to be able to say to people. So you have like, you've got like a real job. Where do you fit? Not saying that playing music isn't a real job, folks. Okay. Don't send me those angry emails.
Don't come for her.
But where do you find time to fit in music?
So I have one of my jobs, like my private practice job, I am technically self-employed. I'm an associate with a private practice. So I, I make my own schedule. So I only do that 3 days a week right now. And then my other job is at Bridgepoint, which is an eating disorder recovery center. And it's, I guess I could call it part-time, but it's essentially however much I can fit in a week. And just depending on what kind of programming they have going on, I might be out there 4 days out of the week, and I might not be there for a month kind of thing. So there's a ton of uncertainty and also flexibility in my schedule. So I'm every day, I literally every night before I go to bed, I have to check my calendar and be like, what does my day look like tomorrow? Because I have no, like there's no stability there, which is sometimes scary, but mostly great because I can fit things like jamming in. And you know, in the past, I would say month or two, I've really like picked up my guitar again and I've really like made it a priority. And it's sort of been a coping thing for me lately too. So it's like, I know that I have to make time for coping or else I won't be able to do everything else in my life. So it's, while it's kind of like a fun thing that it's nice to do, it's also sort of been a necessity lately.
Mm-hmm. I actually had a thought pop up when you were talking about your healing journey, and I was wondering, and like, you could totally be like, Megan, I don't want to go there, but I was wondering if you would be open to sharing one of the like, one of the nastiest like diet culture beliefs that you had. Cause I feel like we're having this conversation and I think that we've like, I love your account. I know the messages that you're promoting. And I also like believe that, know what I've had to work through. And I'm kind of, I just wonder if, like, I feel like diet culture is just like so deeply ingrained, and it's, and the, in the wellness world is just like, there's just so, it's so sneaky, I guess, for lack of a better word, right? So I was wondering if you would share with me one of the nastiest diet culture beliefs that you held, and that was maybe one of the ones that just like stick out in your mind of something that you had to really work through. Because I'm curious if this, like somebody listening might be like, oh, I thought that was a normal thing.
Right. You know? Oh. It's funny. I was just messaging with someone last night, and they're like, what's your biggest like pet peeve with diet culture? And I'm like, oh my God, I have to pick one. Like, I think for me, it's, oh, this is such a big topic, but it's the fat phobia. It's the anti-fat bias, and it's the weight bias. So to give you more of an example, when I was in my like disordered eating, like holier than thou, you know, superiority complex kind of thing with how I was eating and how I was exercising, I still never would have read about fat phobia and been like, yeah, I'm fat phobic. Like, you know, like I never would have connected those dots. And it's taken a very long time to sort of unravel, like you said, how deeply ingrained this stuff is in everything. Like it's weight stigma and weight bias. It occurs on many different levels. So like intrapersonal. So that could be internalized stigma, the way we judge ourselves, the way we talk to ourselves, what we think of ourselves for our, you know, based on our size. Then there's interpersonal, which is the interactions we have with other people. It could be like people commenting on your weight, people commenting on your diet, people praising you for losing weight, you know, things like that. And then there's societal or organizational. And that's sort of the level that I didn't understand before. And so that level, people in, you know, straight size bodies or in thinner bodies, they actually can't experience that themselves. That is the level where it only affects people in larger bodies. And this is where if you're in a larger body, you're less likely to get hired for a job. If you go to the doctor with an ear infection, there's a very good chance you're going to leave with a recommendation for weight loss and not antibiotics for your ear infection. You know, and like there's a very good chance that when you go to a restaurant, you're going to have to wait extra long because there's only chairs available and the chairs don't accommodate your size. So I think that sort of level of weight stigma was something I didn't understand. And I thought, you know, well, everyone has body image issues, like that affects everyone, which is true, but that's not what weight stigma is.
Yeah.
Right. That differentiation for me. So I think the biggest thing that I've realized is we are all fat phobic. We all have anti-fat bias. And it's so deeply integrated into our system. And it's so intertwined with white supremacy, racism, and classism.
Yeah. 100%. 100%. Do you want to, you know, I don't want to make you just pick one thing, and I really appreciate you sharing that. Do you have another one you want to lay on me? Like another thing that you hate about the diet industry? I'm sorry. This is like, I'm just like, I so appreciate you and everything that you're sharing with me and eventually the listenership. Because this is a snacks. Sometimes we talk about snacks on this podcast. And so for me, this is like a dream come true, like to have you on here, like speaking about, why I hate the phrase junk food, you know, like yep. that really bothers me when people say that, oh, like not real food or things like that.
Yes.
Yeah. I can't stand that. That's one of mine.
Yeah. Yes. So that, that's a perfect example of how classism and elitism is kind of tied into diet culture. So the term junk food, let's just go there because it's
sure,
what we're talking
yeah,
about.
Yeah.
The term junk food is to me now so obviously classist. But to me, even like a year or two ago, like I wouldn't have even thought twice about it, right? So junk food. So junk, the word junk suggests that this thing is not serving a purpose, right? That's what junk is. It's purposeless. It's useless. And the things that we call junk food are typically the most widely available, the most affordable, and the most energy dense foods. So we're talking like chips, fast food, convenience food, you know, things that they, I'm not saying they should be, but they're the cheapest things to buy, right? So because of this idea we have with food of like, we're in charge of our own health and it's all about personal choices and stuff. If that were really true, then what we're saying is people who choose to eat junk food are choosing to be in poor health and are choosing, you know, like it's all their fault. Like the blame is falling on the individual. But when we look at who, like which population is most reliant on convenience foods and fast foods and things, it's people living in poverty. It's BIPOC communities. So it's like, what are we suggesting when we call it junk food? Like, what does it say about the people who rely on those foods for sustenance, right? And obviously that's a bigger issue with capitalism and, you know, food availability and food insecurity, but it's just so intertwined. Again, it's like that individualism with health. That's another one of my biggest pet peeves with diet culture, is that it's like, all you need is willpower. All you need is to, you know, make the right decisions, just eat less or just move more or just whatever. And it's like, if it were that easy, we would not be having any issues with this stuff, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Sydney, I really appreciate you being just like, yeah, so open and sharing so much information with me. We actually have to take a short break. So we'll be right back. That seemed a little bit awkward, a little bit clunky. Maybe I'm not a, you know what? I'm just so, I'm hanging on your every word and I'm not responding as quickly as I wish I was, because I'm just processing everything you're saying, and I really appreciate you. And on that note, we'll be right back, dear listener. Okay. Hi, friends. You are listening to Pep and Ched with Megan Nash, a co-production with the Creative City Center. And today's guest is Sydney Wright. Hello. You are listening to Pep and Ched with Megan Nash, a co-production with the Creative City Center. Now more of my conversation with Sydney Wright. And we're back. Sydney, I have to ask you, when's your birthday?
I want you to guess my sign.
Well, okay. You were on the call early. So at first I was like, oh my goodness, this is some like earth sign energy. Look at you like getting into the call like before. Like you were so like punctual. I'm like could you be like a Virgo? But the Taurus though, like I could see Taurus as well with like mainly because of food, like, you know what I mean, like,
right? Yeah.
You know, I've watched you like taste test a lot of like different kinds of hummus on your story. That's pretty that's some Taurus energy. But I also because I know, I feel like when you're talking about your journey, a lot of it is like, a lot of your path has been inspired by things that you really care about and you're really passionate. And so I'm always like, when I see that kind of passion, I think Scorpio. But then there's also this part of me that's like, you could be an Aries for all I know. I don't know. I don't know. Like, it would be so cool if you knew your main three, your rising, your sun, and your moon.
I do.
Oh, you do?
I think you're going to be really surprised.
Well, you know, I have no idea what I'm talking about. So hit me.
Okay. So first of all, I find this hilarious. Like, I find this amazing. I fear knowing how people perceive me. So this is, this is terrifying, but also so funny. And like, I'm really enjoying it. I've never once gotten Taurus energy.
Really?
As like how I'm perceived before. No, that's really funny. But I get it. Cause I am very like, I feel like the stereotypical like Taurus energy is just like head on, like aggressive, like let's do this thing. So I am that way kind of with the food stuff, but my sun sign is Cancer.
My
Yeah, I'm a Cancer. I'm a little sensitive angel. And then my moon is Gemini, and then my rising is also Cancer.
Okay, well, I am out to lunch and I'm selling all my astrology books right after we're done this call.
Just edit that out.
Yeah. I'll just voice over like all like where my guesses. You could be Cancer, or you could be Cancer, or you could be Cancer. That's so funny. And what I meant to when I said like Taurus with food, it's like, cause I know food is like Taurus is like a very foodie sign. So I just like, I know you really like different kinds of hummus. So that's where I was coming from with that. But Cancer, that is, I love Cancers. I'm a Scorpio, right? Some of my dearest friends on this planet are Cancers. I'm also Cancer rising.
Are you? Yeah. I could see that in you. Yeah. Well, I mean, we're water signs. So I feel like I feel that connection with water signs. So
Yeah. I'm Cancer rising, Scorpio sun, Aquarius moon.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm just floating. I'm just like,
yeah,
like,
you're a lot of things. I like that.
I'm this emotional being that's just floating all the time. Well, not normally. I'm not normally this floaty, but like being isolated as I have been in the last like whatever 20 months it's been or however long, a lot of the working from home, I've found myself just like, yeah, being really floaty. But like for me, having a pet really helps. Having like this little critter that I have to like look after is like super good for somebody like me. And also I think that's like having, you know, any Cancer in your chart, like the chance to like nurture something, right? I'm like,
oh my gosh, that is so funny, because when I got my cat back in March, I was in a very different place than I am now, but I at the time was still struggling with this, like, I need to be needed, I need to nurture something, and I need it to need me. And that's how I ended up with my cat. And now I've really been working on that whole needing to be needed thing. But my cat, I totally agree with you, just like having someone else to like nurture and care for, it makes it easier to care for myself, I think. Mm-hmm. So I totally feel you there.
For like, yeah, for sure. Like my dog is like my little anchor to reality. Like he is like so grounding for me. And like, I was actually, okay. So last night, I don't know, maybe I shouldn't even say this yet. Maybe I shouldn't even put this out there, but my partner was like, you should write a children's book about you and Shiloh. And I was like, whoa, like,
oh my gosh.
It would be, that would so be amazing. Funny. I wish I could draw though. Like if I could also illustrate it, like I'd have to find somebody to illustrate this. But I was like thinking this morning, I was like, you know, every morning, like Shiloh gets up and stretches and reminds me to have a stretch too. And like, I don't know. I feel like I could write this book about like, that's kind of like, about my journey with Shiloh, which has been so sweet. And also like how he encourages me to look after myself and like vice versa, like kind of incorporate like some self-care stuff in there. I don't know. It could be fun, but
I love that. That's actually, it's funny you say that, because with a lot of people who struggle, you know, with wherever they're at in their eating disorder, but they're struggling to eat. One thing that I've done before is when you feed your dog, you have to eat something too.
Yeah.
So it's just like habit stacking almost. And like when you, you know, give your dog some water, that's when you can drink some water too, you know, like just starting with, because sometimes it's really hard for people to like think that they deserve to be taken care of. So if the starting point is just like, when I take care of someone else, then I also have to do it to me, then that's where we start. So I've definitely done that with people before.
Yeah. Wow. I love my dog so much, and I love looking after him, and I really love that. And I love, it's nice to hear that other folks, like I haven't really talked to someone else who's like really, that's resonated with them. So yay, animals. They are the best. And also like during the pandemic too, I've found that like my partner's had a job this entire time, and I kind of live vicariously through his schedule too, because like my schedule has always been strange. Like before, when we were touring, it was just like, yeah, it's just always been a little different. So to be able to like remember that it's like Monday to Friday is has been really nice. Yeah,
totally. Yeah, I feel like even if like myself, like I love the flexibility. I love not having like the 9-to-5 kind of schedule, but some structure is usually good.
Yeah, 100%, 100%. I was curious, when you are, what's your cat's name? Before we get one step further, what's your cat's name?
My cat's name is Bob. Bobby Robert.
Oh, that's so sweet. Oh, wait, do you have, okay, I do have questions about snacks. Sorry, I'm just getting excited. But I want to know, I actually don't know, like I've never lived in the city with a cat. Do you have to like have your cat on a leash all the time? Like how do cats work? that's the question for you. I'm just, this burning question. How, Sydney, how do cats work?
What are cats? So I live in an apartment. So it's a bachelor suite, so I don't even have a bedroom. It's just my cat and I sharing this space. I'm pretty sure he believes it's his apartment.
Yes.
And I am in his space. But yeah, when I take him outside, which I do occasionally, I do have him like on a harness and a leash.
Oh, that's so sweet.
Yeah, he was rescued with Street Cats, the organization. And when I do take him outside, I can tell he's very afraid of vehicles. So I don't know what his early life was like, but sometimes we'll just go to the park and I'll like read and have him on a long leash and he can eat bugs or whatever cats do. Yeah.
No, that's so sweet.
That's how cats work.
Well, thank you for that. Cause I've always been curious because you see some cats just roaming and I have a friend of mine who lives in Moose Jaw and her cat has been on different Facebook groups before because people are like, where this cat is like roaming the streets. But her cat always comes home to her. So that's just like their schedule. I don't know. It's a little bit different. Yeah. That's also Moose Jaw. That's also a smaller city. But like, I've always thought I would have a harness if I had a cat.
Yeah, no, like I know people in the city here, like even in like Cathedral area who have outdoor cats and they just like roam the neighborhood and then come back to sleep at night and use litter box or whatever. But yeah, both exist. Mine is very much so an indoor cat.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. So thank you for telling me how cats work. I grew up on a farm. If the listeners don't know, I grew up on a farm. Okay. It was just like, it was different with animals then, you know, like that, like you had like barn cats and then you had like maybe one, it was kind of strange. Like we had one indoor cat, I think, but also like indoor outdoor, cause you're on the farm. And then dogs growing up were never inside. Not until my mom.
Yeah, I've heard that. I've heard that from some of my clients who grew up on farms too. It's very similar.
Yeah, yeah. My mom eventually got like a Shih Tzu and then that dog was inside. But like, growing up, unless there was like a thunderstorm, and that was really exciting for me because then like our dogs got to come into the porch and I was like, the dogs are in the house. This is so exciting. And now it's like my dog sleeps beside me every night and I can't imagine my life any other way. Sorry, when you're touring, when you're traveling, what are your favorite like traveling snacks?
Traveling snacks. So I'm, whether I'm traveling or not, convenience is like a huge thing for me. It's just always going to be one of my priorities. So I love bars, like granola bars, protein bars, whatever it is. If you like it and it's easy enough to like throw in your bag or something, I love doing bars and like pairing it with a fruit that comes in a natural casing, so like a banana or an orange or something, so you don't have to worry about, you know, washing it or like putting it in a container. That combo is a totally balanced snack and it's super easy and like thoughtless. Like there's really no planning that goes into it. You throw two things in your bag and that's a go. I want to really emphasize that, especially when you're traveling, like I've never actually toured before, but I've obviously traveled for other things. And when you're traveling, you can't, I mean, you could, but it would take a lot of energy. But the priority of like balanced eating kind of has to be bumped down a few notches. Eating anything is going to be better than eating nothing. So there's really no reason to feel guilty or bad for, you know, hitting drive-throughs in every town you stop in, because your body's going to use it. Your body's still using that energy. It's okay if you're not, you know, hitting your iron needs for a day, or you're not hitting your fiber needs for a day. Like, your body is totally capable of handling that for stretches of time. And, you know, quote unquote, healthy eating or healthful eating includes flexibility, and it includes variety. And variety means convenience foods, fast foods as well. So there's lots of snacks that you can kind of incorporate to get, you know, some of those like fruits and vegetables in or whatever it is, but there's really no like pressure to have a perfectly balanced diet, especially when you're on tour. It's just like other things are going to take priority. Yeah. And that's okay.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. I love that you said fruit with a natural case, because like that's something that I need to be like, or I want to be more mindful of when I start traveling again, is like having bananas on the road. I'm into that idea. I never really used to eat bananas until the pandemic, and I started making oatmeal every morning, and then that's when I really got into bananas, actually. But I love that. I'm just imagining my favorite protein bars are these, like, are those mint chocolate Clif ones. I just love them.
The Builder bars. Yeah. Yep.
I love them so much. So I was like, yeah, if I added a banana to that, that would be a really satisfying combo. So thank you so much. Absolutely. For that tip. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. And if you're more of like a savory person, cheese and crackers, it's a classic, but it's honestly such a great option. And if you're not, you know, gonna like slice cheese and put it in a container beforehand, like Baby Bells, cheese strings, like, we don't have to shy away from, again, those like quote unquote processed or prepackaged foods. Like, that's what they're meant for, is convenience, and they're giving your body what it needs. So yeah, I always suggest that too, the cheese and crackers, or like hummus and crackers, whatever it is.
Yeah, no, I love that. When you're in the studio snacks, like if the listener's never been in the studio, let's paint a picture. You're in there for a long time using a lot of energy you don't have the time to like really, you know, prepare once you are in there, you know, like not every studio has like access to a kitchen or, you know, like a cooking space really. So, for you, when you are in the studio, what are your favorite studio snacks?
So in the studio, I feel like it's super easy to, well, you're obviously distracted. You're really busy doing something, like, you know, all your energy is going into. So it's really easy to not notice your hunger cues. So in my experience, and like, I've only recorded a few times, but in my experience, you'll go for like 4 hours and then look down and like your hands are shaking or like you have a headache or you feel really nauseous and you're like, oh crap, I haven't eaten in like a long time. So in situations like that, I would say carbs are going to be the most important thing to try to get in you consistently. So if you can have, you know, anything on hand, like again, the granola bars, or like the protein bar will have carb and protein, or crackers, like it can be anything. And those aren't going to keep you like full and satisfied for a long time. But if we're thinking about like our ability to focus and our brain's need for continuous carb supply, because our brain runs solely on carb, I would say if we're gonna pick one of the macronutrients to focus on, it would definitely be carb. And then if you want more of that like feeling full, feeling satisfied, so that you can focus on other things, the fat and the protein, that's where those ones come in. So first of all, I don't know if this is possible for everyone in every studio situation, but I love ordering Skip when I'm in the studio, when I'm recording something, like ordering food in for everyone. It's just a nice little like break that you get to take, and everyone gets to enjoy their meal. I love doing that. But some things like that are super easy, like a peanut butter and jam sandwich, the most underrated food.
Yeah.
if you use like a whole grain bread or something, and you don't have to, of course, but if you were to, there's a protein source, there's a fiber source, there's a carb source. And then with the peanut butter, it's a fat source. It's literally a perfectly balanced meal, and they're so easy, and that you can just throw them in your bag. So easy. I also love having like trail mix on hand because it's like a shareable snack. Well, in pre or post COVID. And yeah, again, like kind of giving you everything you need. And it's pretty convenient. So those are usually my go-tos.
Oh, I love that. I do find on vocal day, I try to avoid the peanut butter.
Oh, yeah, that's a good call.
However, I do really love peanut butter and jam sandwiches whenever, wherever. And like my sister, she sings opera. So she's coming at music and at singing from a slightly different place than I am. Because like she'll be like, she won't eat peanut butter like the day of. But I find like if I'm eating peanut butter in the morning, things are going to be fine by the time I'm like right. going, you know, to do the vocal takes, hopefully in the evening or afternoon. I feel like when I first started singing, I really hated singing in the morning, but now it doesn't bother me as much as it used to. I can kind of sing, I don't know any. I could kind of sing any time of day now. That's a weird, weird brag. But I remember one time though, this is just a story of caution, a cautionary tale. I did eat a big plate of macaroni and cheese 15 minutes before I had to sing once, and that was a little hard. That was a lot of dairy. Yeah.
It's a lot of dairy. It's a lot of, it just like, it would probably take a lot of energy to digest it, which is fine when you're able to just like rest and digest. But when you have to like be on and do yeah. something, yeah, that might be a little tough to do.
yeah. That was, I remember just thinking like, oh, my sister would not be happy with me right now. Like just like, yeah. Because I think she tries to avoid dairy the day of as well, for simply like vocal phlegm reasons. But mm-hmm. I'm not singing opera. Like sometimes you just, if you get that phlegm, you just work with it, right?
yeah actually it's funny you bring that up. I remember last year I was looking into the studies that are like studying, is there a connection between milk or dairy consumption and like mucus secretion? Because that was a really common thing I was seeing a lot of, like people claiming that milk causes like excessive mucus production and all this stuff. And the studies are all inconclusive. Like there's no actual evidence that dairy causes phlegm.
Yes. Okay. I'm this doesn't, just so the folks at home know, I was just fist pumping the air. This is so nice to hear, because did I struggle after eating that plate of macaroni and cheese? Yeah, because it was a huge portion before I had to play. Yeah. But if I ate it earlier that day, yeah. So, okay, this is interesting. I appreciate you shedding some light on that, because I love dairy. And I quite often, like, Baby Bells for me is something I love to have on tour.
Yeah.
I love to have Baby Bells on the road. And, yeah. What do you think about peanut butter and the voice, though? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, okay. As soon as you said like peanut butter and singing, I instantly had this image of like a dog, like
yeah.
Butter, you know. So, in terms of studies, there aren't any. It's kind of just like a textural thing.
Oh yeah.
So I think, and even with the milk too, like just because studies are saying that like no, it doesn't cause phlegm secretion. If you feel a certain way, like if you don't like the feeling of dairy in your throat, or you don't like the feeling of like peanut butter, like in your mouth, in your throat. You do you, right? I'm not here to discredit your experience, but with peanut butter, I could see how just like the texture and like the fat content of it could potentially like alter how you sound, maybe. But again, that would be so individual. So yeah. I say I believe you, and I don't know if it would be true for everyone.
Yeah. Well, I've heard what I need to hear, and that is I'm going to eat cheese. that's it. I'm gonna eat cheese before I sing.
You have been granted permission to eat cheese.
You know, the only thing that I do find that I really have to avoid, besides like I do before eating something that's like that does take some time to digest, I do have to be mindful of that before singing, especially when it's like 2 45-minute sets, because I want to have my all my energy and like not be like, you know, sleepy. But I find the one thing I really have to avoid on stage is beer. I love the idea of having a beer on stage.
Yep.
But I am going to burp. I'm going to get dehydrated. Like it's not going to be good for me. And I'm always like, I feel like, okay, I'm not trying to like call my band out or anything. I love my band very much and they know that. But like, there is this part of me that's like, I wish that I could enjoy the Ryder beer when they enjoy the Ryder beer, but I literally can't. Because it's like, I'm gonna burp. I don't know how Tanner does it. He sings like an angel, but he can definitely he could tip a couple back and it doesn't affect him like that. But like me, no way.
Some people's tolerance for carbonation is just lower, and I feel like I'm one of those people. Like I have one sip of a Diet Coke and I'm like, yeah, no, this isn't gonna work.
I know. Yeah. Also, I feel like I love being goofy. My band loves being goofy. We're just like, we're very like, I don't know. We like to have fun. And I feel like it's becoming a part of my mandate. Unintentionally, that's like, hello, I'm a grown up and I can be goofy without alcohol, without any substance, you know? So it's like, because I've had people like doubt that I'm sober on stage, and it's like, I am always sober on stage.
And that's You're just in a silly, goofy mood.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So I don't want to, yeah. So I guess it's fine. It's fine that I can't drink the fun beer while we're playing.
You're still having the fun. You just don't have the fun juice with it.
Yeah.
That's like a good deal, though. Like, you're still getting the fun out of it, just without the burps.
Yeah, yeah. All the fun, no burps.
Yeah, there you go.
Well, on the note about burping, I actually, I do have some, like, acid reflux that, like, sometimes I make this, like, it's like an inhaling hiccup. But it's like a sound, and I've never done it on stage, but if I do, I will be so sad.
Yeah.
If I do that on stage.
Yeah, I mean, that stuff, like, I don't know, this is probably different, but, like, you ever get those, like, throat gurgles?
Yes!
Where, like, your throat just makes the loudest noise. Yes! And you're like, who wants that?
Yes.
Yeah, I feel the same way about that. It's just, like, if a mic picked that up... Like, can you imagine? Like, who is trying to escape from inside Sydney's throat?
I know. And it sounds like when I do these, like, inhale hiccup things, it sounds like I'm having, like, what's the right word? Like, a premonition or something. It's like, it's just, like, it's so much. And I've never, and they've gotten really bad during the pandemic. I think probably stress-related. But if I do that on stage... I'll retire. I'm just kidding. No plan B. I can't retire. No plan B. Well, that's when I'll write my children's book. Sydney, this has been such a joy. Thank you so much for chatting with me and for sharing just like so much of yourself, your experience, your knowledge with myself and the listenership. I just really, and the listeners. I just really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me. And I wanted to say, I meant to say this at the beginning, but congratulations on your release.
Thank you.
So exciting. But yeah, thank you so much for having me. I love doing stuff like this. I'd love to be back one day if you have me.
Okay, thank you so much, pal. Bye.
Bye.
Sydney, thank you so much. Dear listener, please check out her Instagram at Sid the Dietitian. I should also make note too, she has a new band called Dream Broker, so watch for music from that project as well. You've been listening to Pep and Chad with Megan Nash, a co-production with the Creative City Center in Regina, Saskatchewan, and we've got some folks to thank. The Creative City Center is supported by the Canada Council for the Arts, Sask Arts, the City of Regina, Canadian Heritage, and Creative Saskatchewan. This podcast is made possible because of their ongoing support, so thank you so much. Also, thank you to the Garys for the use of their song Burger Boy as the theme music that you are hearing right now. The Creative City Center is a community-based art center that used to present around 200 events a year and gave a lot of emerging artists a home as they were starting out. Now they are a home for a lot of online production, so check out creativecitycenter.ca to see what else they're cooking up besides all this. Pep and Ched with me, Megan Nash. Support live music, folks, no matter what form it's served up in. Okay, thank you. Bye-bye.